Welcome to the Stranger Still podcast. I'm Miles.
I'm Kathleen.
We are rewatching every episode of Stranger Things ahead of the May and July two-part releases of season four.
Right. It's been 3 years. Let's catch up together. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at StrangerStill22.
Yeah. Subscribe, review on Spotify, Anchor, wherever you get your podcasts. So while it's damp, not wet, not dry, let's hit this episode with four puffs of the Farrah Fawcett spray, season two, chapter six, The Spy.
High five, baby. All right, so lots to cover today. Let's start off just the way the episode starts. So they're bringing Will to the lab. He's, you know, after his whole ordeal with the end of last episode with the upside down getting torched.
Where does it hurt? Everywhere!
Everywhere!
What is it? It burning everywhere! Yeah, creepy.
Intense. Okay, so, you know, Dr. Owen starts questioning Joyce about, you know, why haven't you told us this? Blah, 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 blah. And she's like, I've told you everything that he's been going through, and you guys keep telling me that it's fine, that it's PTSD. She's pissed. She's not going to take their guff.
Yeah, he's like, these are new symptoms, which in his defense, there is a slightly new symptom, which is the drawing. But then again, that was Joyce's idea, not the doctor's idea. So maybe I'm back on Joyce's side. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm 100% on Joyce's side. I think she's doing an awesome job. She's not going to let them walk all over her. She's like, listen, you keep telling me that he's got PTSD or that he's getting the best treatment ever. And yet, what is the treatment? What treatment are you giving him? What is wrong with him? Well, you guys can't tell me.
And they haven't shared with her what they knew. She figured it out herself.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're figuring out all together that there's some sort of connection. They bring in the little piece of the upside down in the little cage, and they start to light it on fire with the torch, and it hurts Will, even though he's not, you know, in proximity to the fire. So it's a scientific discovery. Everyone's very excited. Congratulations all around.
Yeah, congratulations. Yep. They basically confirm what they suspected when they were testing the soil in the previous episode. Yeah. So a bit alarming.
Yeah. And a lot of stuff happens in the lab. Well, Hopper's being hosed off.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Owens does, you know, a trustworthy thing with Hopper. He's like, listen, I'm going to show you the gate. I'm going to show you what this thing has become. Mm-hmm. They go into the elevator. They see, you know, that
it is enormous now. It's been growing unbeknownst to them underneath the surface this whole time.
Joyce is talking to Bob. I love that little conversation where Joyce is saying, like, you know, Bob's trying, like, he's kind of going through shock in a little bit, but
trying to comprehend what he's, you know, what he's seen. And she's like, you know, I couldn't say anything. They made us sign all of these documents. You're probably going to have to sign them too.
And he's like, absolutely. What documents?
Yeah. I like his insight there. It just shows, like, okay, he is very intelligent. Mm-hmm. So maybe I should question what they're going to make us sign.
I'm just so happy with the way they do Bob, and not happy with the way they do Bob later, but that he's just like, he seemed like he was going to be the classic boyfriend who was only in the story to separate Joyce and Hopper. And that as soon as the reality of the danger came, Bob was going to flee, you know, and which would highlight the bravery of the main characters. But Bob, there's just something different about it.
Yeah, you see, he has this unconditional love for Joyce.
He truly,
and that endures.
Yeah. And he's pure of heart, and he's willing to, he said, hey, you told me this wasn't a normal family. I was warned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I love Bob Newby, superhero. Is that what he says? Bob Newby,
superhero. Yeah.
He's like, I thought stuff like this only happens in the movies and the comic books. You know, that's right, Bob. Yeah. Folk in those stories, they had a lot of chances of turning back. Only they didn't. They kept going.
Okay.
Because they were holding on to something.
Lord of the Rings. Lord of the Rings.
What are we holding on to, Bob?
So not only did they discover Will has this connection with the upside down, but they also realize that he's losing his memory. He doesn't remember Bob. Mm-hmm. He doesn't remember the doctors. He doesn't even remember Hopper, which is definitely concerning.
Do you think he even really remembers his mom or Mike there in that scene?
No, so I think he does.
I disagree. I think that's the mind flayer making connections, context clues. It takes him a long time to remember the name of Mike.
I don't know. I think the memories are still there.
I think, I mean, maybe it's foggy. Again, this is like, they set us up. They primed us in the earlier episodes that this is not Dungeons and Dragons. This is not, it's not pure true sight. You know, there's something more complex going on here between the fusion of will and the mind flayer.
Oh, certainly. But I definitely still think that the memories are there.
Let's agree
to disagree.
Yeah. So Joy, you talked about Joyce in the hospital. And can anyone tell me what's wrong with my boy? And all the doctors, they're sitting there silent. They have no suggestions whatsoever. They don't know. Then they have that meeting without Joyce.
Yep. They start comparing his brain scans between the previous ones and the now brain scans, and they are seeing significant abnormalities, basically showing that the shadow monster is taking over his brain.
Yeah.
But I like Dr. Owens in this. You know, he takes Hopper aside and he's basically saying, okay, so this is pretty much a virus that is taking over its host. But what's unusual is that the virus has like a hive mind. What do you call that? Hive?
Hive mind sounds good to
me. He's got a hive mind in which it is communicating with all the other hosts.
Yeah.
I like that. I like that comparison that, you know, they're not just thinking of this in the supernatural sense. They are thinking of it as a virus. And really, it is like that. I mean, yeah.
Some of the doctors say, you know, we got to do the burn, and if the boy dies,
he dies. Yeah. Oh yeah, and Dr. Owens will not accept that. So,
say that to me again. That's what Dr. Owens says right there.
Oh yeah,
I love that. But all these doctors sitting there who have nothing to say at all, they have been wrong at every turn. The Hawkins
lab.
Remember, they thought the Demogorgon was no problem. It's not going to hurt you. They thought that, you know, the gate can't go through the floor.
They've been controlling it.
Yeah, we've got to control. It can't go through the floor. The floor is the floor. They have no questions for Joyce. They have no questions for Will. They don't have any. I mean, this is so realistic. I see people saying, like, why is the Hawkins lab so incompetent? This is corporate America, man. This is government work, man. Nobody has any idea. You get a nice white coat, you get a nice house, a nice salary. You start to think you have everything figured out. So you stop asking questions. You stop being curious. It's so well written. The Hawkins lab lacks respect for what they don't know. They still think they can, remember, should they, we can, the best care is here, Mrs. Byers. You know, they say that.
What exactly is the care?
Yeah, what's the care? And you've been wrong so many times. A little humility, a little bit of like, hey, Joyce, I'm sorry. We've gotten everything wrong from this point. We didn't even think it could go through the floor. Apparently it can somehow.
However, through this, you see that Owens is starting to ask questions.
Yeah,
he's starting to test. Yep, he's separating himself. Yep, yeah. Testing the boundaries. So let's go to a little snippet where we see Will staring at the guards. It's almost like he is the shadow monster at that point. And
he wants to kill them.
But he plays it off as if he knows how to defeat the shadow monster at that point.
So they bring him into that conference room and they say, okay, point us out something. And he goes, here. And he goes, what is that? And Will says, I don't know, but I know he doesn't want us to go there. Yep. Doesn't want me to know about it.
Yep. So the lab, you know, Dr. Owens, they send in 5 to 6 guys with guns to the place that Will pointed out. They're monitoring them with radar, guiding them, you know, to this place.
Yeah. And we'll circle back around to that at the end. Why don't we ping pong a little bit through the other stories that are kind of going on in the midst of all this action at the lab? Jonathan, Nancy are still with Murray Bauman outside of Hawkins.
Yep. So they've created a bunch of these tapes. They're going to send them to the press. And at this point, I mean, you are now starting to sympathize with Dr. Owens. And you're understanding, I mean, things are so much bigger than we before realized. And so we know that if this story gets out at this point, it could be like this huge catastrophic thing. Like, what do we do at this point?
I think you mentioned that earlier. I do feel a little bad for Dr. Owens, but the other 6 guys are sitting there silently.
I want those
guys to go down
hard.
So I'm on it. Yeah. Murray is, trying to guess Jonathan and Nancy's life stories.
No, he's not guessing. He is like nailing it.
Well, he's accurately
assessing
describing
the situation. Yes.
They're all drinking vodka, and Murray takes the vodka upstairs with him when he goes to bed. Is that a party foul?
No, it's his vodka.
That's weird to me. You're all three sitting in a living room, adjoined area, and
with
there's one
minors,
bottle of vodka.
Two minors. Well, the minors sing them. It's his vodka. All right. Shouldn't even be drinking. He shouldn't have even given them alcohol, okay? Isn't that a felony?
So Jonathan's going to sleep on the pullout couch, and Nancy's going to sleep in the room, and they have these, like, crisscross
internal
moments.
Arguments with themselves.
Apparently, this is, like, Indiana Jones. Something in Indiana Jones is like this.
Oh.
Everybody who reviewed, because I went, go through and read all the reviews of the episodes. Apparently, there's an Indiana Jones thing here, but I don't know what it is exactly.
Apparently,
so
we have not watched Indiana Jones enough.
You're welcome, podcast listeners.
So they, they're arguing with themselves, and then they come together.
Does this feel like a betrayal of Steve?
No.
They broke up?
Steve broke up with Nancy, basically.
He did?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he pretty much broke up with her. And I don't think it's a betrayal. I think it's, following their true feelings, which is a good thing. It's better for Steve that she's not continuing to wish-wash between Steve and Steve and Jonathan.
I think Murray calls it out. But I don't know that Jonathan and Nancy's relationship is very healthy. They've got, they're young, they're attractive, and the real shit, shared trauma. They're only back together now again when traumatic events are happening.
But that's what ultimately brings them together. If they stay together, it's not so bad.
Okay. And they go to breakfast, and Murray says, if you need to reach out to me again, don't. Slams the door. Or how about Dustin and Steve? Here's a wonderful side quest.
Meanwhile, Dustin is filling in Steve on everything that's happened with Dart, and they now have to go find and kill Dart.
Yeah.
So that's what their mission is.
I love that Dustin... Or Steve is kind of like doubtful. Are you sure? You're a little kid. It could be a raccoon or a bear or something. And Dustin says, it ate my cat. And Steve just goes, okay.
Yeah.
He's like, All right, I'm in.
Fair enough. Yeah, but he goes to Dustin's house. He goes into the basement. We see it shed another skin, so it's much bigger.
Wait. Would you have gone into that basement? I love that Dustin is actually scared. Steve is just going down into a dark basement, knowing what the Demogorgon can do.
Because Steve's
with a bat.
Man.
I mean,
Steve's
he is the man. He is brave as hell.
He's armed with is that is nail that, bat.
Yeah, that nail bat. I do love that, and that actually is the best thing to be armed with, because we see bullets do nothing to the Demogorgons.
Absolutely nothing. No.
I wanted to just commend Steve for that, and I love that Dustin is scared. I really like that. And you're expecting like a jolt. You're expecting some explosive.
You like the fear in children, huh?
I love fear in children. That's what I watch TV for. You're expecting. It's so suspenseful as he goes down there. You're expecting some kind of like moment, like da 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 da. But there's nothing. It just fizzles into a. You better get down here.
Yeah, but then we see that it is literally like dug through the side. Those are like straight up cinder blocks, and it's just torn them out like nothing and burrowed its way out.
Oh, no,
there.
This is interesting. You think Dart dug out. I thought the upside down came and got him because the cinder blocks are inside of the basement. So I thought.
He's like tearing them away from the wall.
Okay. Yeah. I thought that it. Like they burrowed all, it tunneled to him, knowing that he was there. That's what I thought.
That's really interesting. I never saw it in that perspective. I mean, I still think that it dug its way out, but that is really interesting.
Could have been teamwork.
And a possibility.
Could have been teamwork. I love the shot that we get through the tunnels, out to the night sky, down to the forest moon of Endor. It's just, I love all the visuals in this episode.
Yeah,
the nice,
really cool
like
visual.
Analog 80s blues and greens and twilight. So then they're on the train tracks.
Meanwhile, Lucas is now getting filled in on Dustin per his bratty sister. Yeah,
turns his walkie back on.
Finds out about Dart. He goes to get Max and is like, listen, I'm going to prove to you that the story I told you is true. Come with me. So they all go to that junkyard. Mm-hmm. They like barricade the bus. They're ready to kick some Demogorgon butt.
Absolutely. But I just wanted to talk a little bit about Steve and Dustin's bonding moment on the tracks.
Oh yeah.
When Steve, you know, they're kind of
really
both
sweet moment.
They're kind of both in a lonely heart moment, right? You know, Dustin's
lonely hearts club.
Dustin's losing Max to Lucas as we mm-hmm. see in other scenes, and
unbeknownst to him,
Steve's losing Nancy to Jonathan.
Unbeknownst to him,
they're kind of, you know, Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band here walking down, and they're talking about girls, and mm-hmm. Steve's giving the advice, you know, just act like you don't care, man, even if you do.
That's so sweet.
Is that good advice? I mean,
No, absolutely not.
Okay. You would know.
Well, it proves that it's not good advice when he's talking about Nancy.
Oh,
Nancy's
yeah.
different.
Yeah. Oh, true. And it also proves it's good advice because Lucas employs the opposite advice to Max and says, I care about
works
you.
Works like a charm.
All right. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's good. So now they're in the junkyard. I know I already talked about it, but I love the visuals of this. I love the junkyard. I love the blue sky, the green stuff, the red and orange, yellow cars, the brown rust there.
Yeah.
Everything is so beautiful. Look, I just want a painting of the junkyard.
God, but it's one of my favorite scenes. Creepy though, as night falls and that fog rolls in, and they're waiting, they're ready. But that's where you have that
getting foggy out here.
Oh God, that's where you have that sweet moment between Lucas and Max, where again, where you mentioned that Max opens up to Lucas. And, you know, he truly listens to her and sympathizes with her. Mm-hmm. We find out exactly what her circumstances are coming to Hawkins. Her parents were divorced. They left her dad to start over basically in Hawkins. And her brother is just angry and bitter about
it.
And we see like where that came from a little bit at least.
Yeah, Billy earlier in the episode is working out, watching TV, listening to music, drinking beer, and smoking a cigarette. I mean, he's doing all five of those things at once. Just saying. To be young. And I love that. I like talking to you, Mad Max. She says, I like talking to you, stalker.
it's just sweet. Really sweet.
And they also have a little moment about Tubular there. It's pretty cool. Lucas and Dustin also have an almost heartfelt moment where they get interrupted, actually. Lucas is saying, like, what? You hid Dart from us, Dustin. Mm-hmm. And Dustin's saying, you told Max when we specifically said we weren't going to tell him. Yeah. And they're about to shake, and Steve interrupts them.
Oh, yeah. I like that moment. He's like, what are you guys doing? The only person that's helping me is some random girl.
So the fog that you mentioned comes in.
Mm-hmm.
Foggy out here. And they're clustered up in their bus fortress. But the Demogorgon's not taking the bait.
Oh, nope. So gallant Steve exits the bus and he's ready to kick some butt.
I love when, what is he doing? And Dustin says, expanding the menu. Offering himself as bait. But there's more than one Demogorgon. Mm-hmm. How many Demogorgons show up to this little party?
Oh, maybe four?
Okay.
Four? I didn't count them, but you know it's definitely a few. It's not like one, it's not two, it's not even three. It's at least four, I would say. And that's when they realize they are in trouble.
Yeah.
So they scream at Steve to get back in the bus. Steve's like, you know, using the heck out of that nail bat.
He's going to
kick some butt.
They're going to die.
Yeah, they're pretty much going to die until suddenly all the Demogorgons leave. And Dustin's like, do you think we scared him off, Steve? No, they were going somewhere.
Yep. And where were they going?
Back
to the lab. Mm-hmm. We're back to the adjacent to the lab. The spot that will set the trap. We've got the soldiers.
Yeah, so you see all the soldiers are walking through. They're confident that they're going to be able to take down the...
Yeah, because they think it's a bunch of plants.
Oh,
because the Hawkins lab didn't ask any questions.
No.
If they were curious, they would have thought, how has this survived for so long? Is it possible it's smarter than just a bunch of plants? Anyway.
And then, so suddenly you see on the radar, you see all of these little dots coming from all directions. So... definitely wasn't just four Demogorgons, or maybe it was in the junkyard.
That's why I was
asking.
But
there are like, you know, tens of, maybe not hundreds, there are tons of dozens of Demogorgons, and they are all coming to kill all of these guys.
Tons of alien references here. Not just the radar that you mentioned earlier. It actually is the same sound effect, those famous blips from the radar scene where they're where the heck is the alien? It's actually above them in the vents.
Oh,
and you see, toot, 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 toot. Yeah. And one of the soldier says, "Stay frosty, boys," which is a line from Alien.
Oh, it is?
And of course, Paul Reiser is in Alien.
That's true.
A lot of Alien reference.
And then interspersed with this, it's like going between the guys getting attacked by the Demogorgons to Will. "I'm sorry, it made me do it. I told you, they upset him. They shouldn't have done that."
And they destroy the soldiers. They destroy the soldiers.
Mike tries to warn them. It was a trap, but it's too late. And then you have that final scene. Dr. Owens and Hopper, they can hear the creatures coming through the rip. And it ends with the one leg coming over the ledge. End credits.
Yeah, that's the Lost sound, by the way. But yes. So what happened? What exactly happened here? So Will pointed that out. Did he want the soldiers to die, or was he the mind flayer at that point?
I think that he was being controlled by the mind flayer at that point. But it's evident that he is still in there because he tells his mom, "You guys better go. Get out of here. It's coming."
It's been hours. You could have said that hours ago, Will.
Yeah.
Like, well, they clearly wheeled him back to the bed. Everyone got comfortable again. Everyone's sitting down. Like, he could have said something at any point. And he also could have said more than just "get out of here." He could have said, "Oh, by the way, they made me point out that thing. That's actually not the place to go. That has nothing to do with it." Like, he could have said more.
But
he's so vague about it.
But again,
I don't trust Will.
Oh, well, we absolutely shouldn't trust Will.
I don't trust
Will. But again, he is being taken over by...
No, I don't trust Will even separate from the taking over. He wasn't going to tell them in the first place, this little shit. He wasn't going to tell anybody anything from the very beginning until... purely confronted by his mom with the absolute truth. He was going to let all this happen this whole time. He experienced that pain as well, didn't he?
Would you say...
he's kind of on the Shadow Monster side, I think. I don't trust this little guy.
Would you say you're not a fan of Will?
Like, okay, so...
No, I disagree with you.
Time is of the essence, and what does he say? "I'm sorry." A little more on that, Will. Like... now everyone has to ask him questions. Like, maybe just a little bit more than the word "I'm sorry."
I think his consciousness, he is trying to fight through the mind flayer, but he's, you know, obviously not being very successful.
Yeah, like, it's a trap would be a good phrase to say.
It's a trap.
Like, is he Will? That's what I don't get. I think
Will is slowly dwindling away in the mind flayer is taken over.
But I'm mostly being tongue in cheek when I say, like, the actual kid of Will is like trying to kill people. But you know, he's not. He is like the worst character at preventing this. He's on the Shadow Monster's side. It seems like a lot of the stuff he does is like, I don't know. We can't rely on the real Will.
Okay, I don't agree that he's on the Shadow Monster's side.
I'm mostly being funny.
All right. All right. So we end every episode with a feeler moment and a music moment. So I'd just like to point out my feeler moment this time is when Hopper calls 11 on the radio and he's apologizing. He says he's going to explain everything to her when he gets home. He's saying he's not mad. He doesn't want to lose her. But as he's talking through that, the camera is showing the empty cabin. And like, you can just feel how much he loves her and that fear that he's losing her. And it's just a really sweet, really sad moment.
And he's saying to eat the peas. Even if they're mushy.
Yeah.
I love that. It's so sad.
Such a dad moment.
It is. And they clearly, like, they've had that conversation before.
That is the dynamic.
Of the peas. Mm-hmm. And there's nobody at the place to hear him except for the peas. The mushy peas are in the freezer. They can hear a muffled radio. Is he talking
and
about us?
And they're crying because they know Levin's not there.
All the peas are like, "Oh, God. Oh, Hopper.
She's not here, Hopper. Hopper, she's not here."
All right. Music moment of the episode is the track on the score, which is called Soldiers. And it plays while the kids and Steve are setting up their junkyard trap and while the Hawkins Lab soldiers are preparing to go into the Upside Down, the place that will...
I was listening to you, listening to this track alone as you were digesting it, and I just thought, God, this just sounds so cool.
Yes, it does. And like She'll Kill You from the season one, we're getting that classic 80s snare drum pop. You know, the big hair, the big sound, the gated reverb. And it's kind of this twang between the pops, like, wow, wow. And then there's this very video game kind of alarm pad sound. You know, you can hear the doop.
It's like soldiers marching.
Yeah. And that video game, like, it's very 8-bit. You can hear it like, boot, doo, hiss, cut. You know, it's like, boot, doo, hiss, cut. You can hear it. It's really cool. And then we get this driving, like, bass. But my favorite part is that this is all written to the scene perfectly. Because as they get the dialogue, the snare drum and everything cuts out of the way for the dialogue. The drum is gone.
See if this kid's a wizard or a schizo, Doc.
It's just playing just the synth parts here.
Oh, is that just to illustrate that at first you think they're going into battle, they're ready to take something down, but then you realize that's not at all what's happening?
Maybe. You know, I didn't...
You lose that, like, soldier kind of drum beat.
Yeah. I didn't think of it that way necessarily as much as that this music is truly made tailored to the scene. Yeah. You know, the drum gets out of the way. And when it comes back, it's on a different beat, you know. So I think what you're saying, that things are a little more uncertain.
They're no longer soldiers. They're then victims.
But I love how the bass drum comes out when the dialogue. Really, you cool. See this, if this kid's a wizard or a schizo, and it's gone there. So really cool.
All right. So our question of this episode is, how are you feeling about Dr. Owens at this point? Because I'll tell you this, he has quite redeemed himself in my eyes.
Yeah, I think the casting is so perfect because of Alien.
Yeah.
And so you're expecting, okay, here's another tribute to an 80s movie. This guy's going to be horrible.
Right.
And it's like the opposite. We're seeing that he is having problems with the way Hawkins Lab has done business. That moment in the boardroom when he says,
Say that to me again. Yeah.
Because now I will admit, in the past, I've thought maybe we should just kill Will to save everybody. Because
you were not a fan of Will.
Well, no, I this is all just joking. For anyone who doesn't know, it's dry humor, by the way.
But objectively, yeah, the like more severe situation is the Upside Down that's spreading, not like one person's life. So it's more like...
Exactly. So we're getting protagonist bias. Mm-hmm. We're saying we've got to save Will at all costs. What if we were watching a show for 13 episodes, a different house in Hawkins, and then just like in the 14th episode, these Demogorgons just burst in and just brutally eat everyone. Mm-hmm. And then you hear later, they could have stopped this, but they had to save one kid.
Right.
You'd be like, what? But all my favorite characters died.
So
it's protagonist bias a little bit here. They probably should think of the greater good a little bit. But also, Dr. Owens' heart is showing. Mm-hmm. And like Captain America, we don't trade life for lives.
That's right.
That's an easy way out.
You know, like, obviously, this is a rewatch, so we knew that Dr. Owens was going to be coming around. But I was surprised at how much you still felt those feelings of, like, oh, he's kind of sleazy. Mm-hmm. Even knowing that he's actually a good guy and that he actually truly wants to fix this situation that he's been thrown into.
I think that he is turning good. I think that he comes into this place with optimism and realizes what's been happening here.
Yeah.
And slowly it's like, oh no.
But I don't think that means he was a bad guy before.
But I mean, he was part of the cover up. And again, you know, it's not the Department of Energy's place to keep these secrets.
Well, this clearly is not the Department of Energy. This is clearly the government, and he is doing his job. He's probably told by the president or the White House that this cannot go out.
Ooh,
and
you
so
think,
he's
you think
doing
this goes up
job.
To Reagan?
Oh, I mean, oh, absolutely, goodness. I think it could. This is huge. I mean, they're talking about the Russians and everything. I think this is coming from the White House.
Okay. Well, I look forward to discovering that with you over time. All right. Thank you. This has been a great episode. We'll be back for Chapter 7. I'm Miles.
I'm Kathleen.
And good night.